Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour writes in a piece in National Journal, Mitt Romney isn't losing because of gaffes and internal friction, but he eventually could be. Stories about campaign meltdowns are common for political operations with eroding poll numbers, but they're more a symptom of a struggling campaign than a cause of the struggles. The real danger for Romney is that the squabbles and missteps are now center stage and conveying the impression of a campaign that is flailing as it tries to oust an incumbent president. For those who have not heard it, this is what's been causing all the uproar in the press the last couple days. Presidential nominee Mitt Romney at a Florida fundraiser in May.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 48. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax. 47% of Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And he'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center that are independent, that are thoughtful, that look at voting one way or the other, depending upon, in some cases, emotion, whether they like the guy or not.
Alex Rorty is our guest this hour, staff writer for National Journal. We welcome you to the program. Thanks, Alex, so much for being with us.
All right, well, thanks for having me on.
When you heard that, did you hear it as Romney dismissing all of President Obama's supporters, 40%, 47% of the country?
a little bit. I mean, I think the first time you hear it, you heard it when it came out Monday afternoon. I think the reaction just about anyone was shock that, oh, wow, I can't believe basically a guy who is running for president sort of just casually dismissed half the country as a bunch of freeloaders, more or less. So it was quite a surprise. Now, Romney makes clear, and I guess in the full context of the video, that he was asked a question, politically speaking, you know, who do you think you can win over? And he's right from a purely political perspective that, you know, he can only – basically 47% of the country is already set, you know, deadlocked to vote for President Obama, just like 47% of the country is really pretty much locked into voting for him. The problem is, I mean, as a guy trying to run to be the leader of the country, the remarks really just seem pretty intemperate.
Has he been able, as a result of his comments after this comment, to reframe the debate when he says, I think a society based on a government-centered nation where government plays a larger and larger role, redistributes money, that's the wrong course for America? Has he made the best of what many would call a gaffe and changed the conversation to the role of government?
Well, he's tried. I think, you know, basically his campaign and you saw today they sent out another memo from the campaign manager, Matt Rhodes, basically arguing that, you know, this election is a choice between someone who wants more government and someone who wants less government and make people help people become more self-reliant. The problem is, and you basically mentioned this at the top, this is seen as a major mistake for his campaign just at a time when he can least afford it. When polls show that – at least some polls have shown that the president has opened somewhat of an advantage in the race. You know, and now there are questions about whether or not Romney's campaign is all on the same page. You know, his response last week to the attacks in Libya was criticized by even Republicans. So now the question isn't – you know, the question in the media isn't so much – you know, is this an election about big government or less government? Right now the question is Mitt Romney's campaign cratering? And that's a real problem 7 weeks before the campaign. And, you know, I say 7 weeks. Don't forget, early voting is right around the corner in Ohio, sort of the quintessential swing state. It starts in 2 weeks. You know, so this time, this is when a lot of casual voters are starting to pay attention. And right now, they're probably not hearing the message that Romney would want them.
Mm-hmm. So does it give us the impression that the campaign is flailing, or does it give us the impression that this candidate is flailing, or both?
No, I think both. Look, Politico on Sunday night published basically a big expose that of a bunch of campaign advisors anonymously, but nonetheless talking to reporters about all the dysfunction of the campaign and finger pointing at one another, which is a fairly remarkable thing. Again, you know, in middle of September, it's a very common article. You know, maybe 2 days after the election, but before, it really sort of, it was a sign of a lot of dysfunction. But you know, a lot of it, and you saw a column from Peggy Noonan of the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Yes.
Look, ultimately, the buck stops with the candidate, Mitt Romney, and that he is, you know, if the campaign is dysfunctional, well, guess whose fault that is.
Mm-hmm. And she was calling for him to get rid of the people who are running the campaign to be as Ronald Reagan was, kind of hard-nosed about the whole thing.
Right. And she's just one, the sort of the latest Republican pundit to come out, or columnist, to really hit Romney in recent weeks. David Brooks, immediately after the video was released, really wrote another brutal column basically saying Mitt Romney doesn't understand America. There is a lot of dissatisfaction among Republicans, both in and outside of the campaign, about how it's run. And again, that's basically just a function of the president right now looks like probably a slight favorite to win in an election and in a year where unemployment is above 8%, the debt is over $16 trillion. The sort of fundamentals, the larger structural factors, you know, seemingly the Republican nominee should have a great chance to win. Right now, it doesn't look that way. And that's right now, it doesn't look like Romney has a great chance to win. And that's why you're starting to see a lot of hand-wringing from Republicans.
You write in your piece, Alex, some Republicans argue that despite the internal skirmishes, the race remains very winnable for Romney. And you go on to say that this operative you talked to said he has a point. Imagine the Gallup tracking poll, which last week showed a major post-convention bounce for Obama, reports later this week that the race is once again deadlocked. It's a plausible scenario.
Right. In fact, not only is it plausible, it's exactly the scenario that happened just yesterday. As a matter of fact, Gallup came out with a poll that showed the presidential race. The president was leading by only 1 point. In a week earlier, it had been as high as 7 points. So a lot of the polls... And now that sort of the president's convention has sort of been forgotten in the minds of voters, you know, it is coming back down to earth. Now, there was another poll from the Wall Street Journal and NBC News yesterday that showed the president up 5 points. And there are polls in important states like Virginia and Ohio that show the president with a comfortable advantage. But look, the suggestion that the presidential race is somehow over is very, very premature. Again, I mean, the very reason why people think Romney should be winning this thing in the first place is the reason he's still in it. Unemployment is you know, at a historically high level. You know, if you look at sort of the economic news now, I mean, it's incredibly pessimistic. You know, it's almost like the situation is deteriorating further. So it's you certainly can't suggest that the president has put this thing away by any means. All you can really say now is that he has sort of maybe ticked up a little bit as a slight front runner.
Mm-hmm. And will there be an ongoing debate now about the role of government, about those people that Romney called dependent upon government, who believe they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, entitled to health care, food, housing, to you name it? What happened is we got a very complete analysis of who's paying taxes, how many of those people are senior citizens, how many are very poor people, how many people rely on government. Is that the direction that he would like this debate in the weeks before the election to go?
Oh, I think he would. He would certainly like it better than the conversation we're currently having,
right,
about whether or not his campaign is in deep trouble. Certainly conceptually, I mean, Americans do sort of believe in a limited government and self-reliance. The problem was, as some of my colleagues have pointed out, this idea of not helping the more disadvantaged with programs, you know, like the income tax credit or other things, reasons why a lot of people aren't paying income taxes in the first place. Look, that is popular. You know, if you look at particularly among independents, maybe not as much among Republicans, but among independents. Romney's comments were politically problematic for a lot of reasons. For that, because it sort of alienates the middle. But look, when he talked about, you know, the 47% who are relying on government, you know, they're all Obama supporters. Look, that's not true. Actually, a lot of them are Mitt Romney supporters, because that 47% includes a lot of seniors who aren't earning an income right now. Seniors are disproportionately Republican. It also includes a lot of working class and blue collar voters. Again, at least if you're talking about white working class voters, disproportionately supporting Mitt Romney. So in a lot of ways, Romney was really kind of insulting his own base when he said that. It includes, of course, President Obama supporters too. But the sort of construction here that people who aren't paying income tax are all Obama supporters is false.
Well, it may also include him. Could you say that? Because he relies on government for his very low tax rate.
Right. Well, that's kind of an issue I also brought up in my story. Romney, who's been sort of under an attack from the Obama campaign for months now about why he hasn't released tax returns more than just a couple of years, probably doesn't want on his own volition to bring up tax rates and how much people are paying in taxes. I will say the Obama campaign has not exactly jumped on that particular angle yet, but I assume maybe that's only a matter of time.
Why is it that he doesn't seem to have a Bill Clinton on his side? You look at the number of people who are criticizing Mitt Romney. David Brooks has written scathing articles. Peggy Noonan is telling him how to run his campaign. A lot of prominent commentators just aren't behind him or want him to shake things up. Is that real damaging for him? And why are so many giving him advice?
Well, look, when Peggy Noonan, who was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, writes a very critical column, it's a lot more damaging than, say, if Gail Collins does it. People know from an ideological perspective that Gail Collins isn't going to agree with Mitt Romney. That's not the case with Peggy Noonan. So it's basically like a member of his own team kind of turning around and attacking him. And that gets a lot of attention and really sort of drives the narrative and the discussion among the media and voters. You know, why this is happening, I think there's a genuine conviction that he's not running a good campaign. He hasn't run a good campaign, and they're very frustrated by that. There's also a frustration, I think, a lot of people got their hopes up when he picked Paul Ryan as his running mate, that he was going to suddenly wage a campaign based on big ideas. And for a few weeks, they seemed to. I mean, they actually really took it to Democrats on this issue of Medicare, traditionally a very favorable issue for Democrats, and really pushed their plan that, hey, we're going to protect Medicare for seniors, and we're going to find a way to make sure that, you know, future groups of seniors, those younger than 55, have some kind of help with their health care, whether that's a premium support model like they propose or something else. That really seemed to go by the wayside the moment the convention started. The conventions, in fact, the Republican convention was really criticized. Romney, even in his own speech, really didn't lay out anything specific for what he would want to do. Is very sort of broadly speaking that he wants to, generally speaking, he wants to turn around America. Well, Republicans were like, well, what exactly are you going to do that? So there's definitely a genuine conviction. He hasn't run a good campaign. And don't forget, 6 months ago, you know, we were talking about a guy who was fending off Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum to win the Republican primary. You know, there are a lot of Republicans who basically their starting point for Mitt Romney is one of distrust. And maybe they want him to beat Barack Obama. There's no doubt in their mind about that. That doesn't mean, you know, they view this guy as the next Ronald Reagan.
Let's go to our very interested audience in just one moment for you to join our conversation. Our phone lines are filled, but there will be openings. 800-486-8655. You can also email talk@WPR.org, post on the Kathleen Dunn Facebook page, and you can also use our tweet. Our Twitter handle is @KDunnShow. To you in just one moment. Our guest this hour is a staff writer for National Journal and wrote a very interesting and fair-minded piece. You can find that online. His name is Alex Rorty from National Journal. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start our phone calls with Frank in Middleton. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm 58 years old and what you would call semi-retired. Old enough for age discrimination, but not old enough for Social Security. And as part of the 47% who've been described as not paying income taxes, I pay a lot of taxes. Every time I go to the store, I pay sales taxes. If I want to buy a set of tires for my car, I pay the tire taxes. If I want to buy gasoline, I pay the fuel taxes. There is just tax after tax after tax, and especially living in here in Middleton, where we have the highest property taxes in the states, I pay property tax. So I don't want to be told that somehow I'm on the dole, because I'm not. I used to be, I guess, what you'd call the working poor, but now I'm the scraping poor. And, yeah, a very significant amount of my money goes for taxes, and a lot more of my money goes for taxes percentage-wise than comes out of Mr. Romney or his 1% friends.
Alex.
Well, I think the caller basically perfectly encapsulates the problem here for Mitt Romney. He's basically seen as insulting a lot of people who can very rightly turn around and say, what do you mean I don't pay any taxes? You know, I think part of the problem with the discussion, and to make clear, this is a debate that sort of raged before Mitt Romney brought it up. This is something conservatives often pointed to, this 47% who they say don't pay income taxes. The problem is that often gets reduced to 47% who don't pay any taxes at all. As the caller pointed out, that's not accurate. There are an infinite number of taxes that people pay. So basically, I mean, the perception is Romney just insulted all of these people, insulted half the country that, we call them essentially a bunch of freeloaders living off the system. There's a lot of reason why people would object to that.
You, in your article, also write about blowups in presidential campaigns being, you say, almost more the rule than the exception. You cite John McCain, mm-hmm. John Kerry, Al Gore. Maybe it isn't that big a thing. It happens frequently.
Sure. Although, to be fair, all those candidates you
they
just
lost.
Listed, they all,
right.
they all lost.
I noticed that.
And look, that's what happens. It's almost like, to make a sports analogy, you know, a team that's winning. Like a football team that's winning, you know, all the problems, and there's always griping and you know, players who aren't playing well, all that gets papered over because the team has a good record and nobody cares about the division. The moment the team starts losing, then all of a sudden you find out that the right guard hasn't been playing well, or the offensive coordinator and the quarterback aren't getting along well. You know, the perception of whether a team is winning, or in this case a candidate is winning or losing, really can sort of, in retrospect, you know, sort of make people judge a decision differently. If Romney were up a couple points in the polls right now, you know, a lot of the same pundits, myself included, would be talking about what a smart campaign the Republican has run, that he hasn't gotten bogged down in specifics and he hasn't even really talked about himself. He's kept the focus on the economy and President Obama. So, you know, really the perception of how you're doing really determines so much of sort of the assessment of your performance.
Jerry in Onalaska, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was astonished by hearing that 47% of the people didn't pay income taxes. I mean, it's just almost beyond belief. Half of our people do not pay income taxes. Fair share. I mean, I think another thing, some of those people, you know, also, due to their tax return, get money from the government. And I think it's a very bad cultural element. Everyone should look at the government as something they support, not as something that supports them. I think it's a very bad practice to have half of our people not participating in paying for the government. I know the tire tax and all that, but income taxes is the heart of our tax system. Everyone should participate.
Alex.
Well, like I said, I mean, this is Mitt Romney has sort of touched off this debate this week, but this is a, sort of a pre-existing argument to begin with, and it's one that really kind of came up last year with the Occupy Wall Street movement. There was sort of a counter to that, like the 53% movement, the 53% of Americans who pay income taxes. And there is certainly a belief among a lot of conservatives and Republicans that, look, if we're talking about, you know, bridging the deficit and we need to somehow get our spending under control and our budget books balanced, you know, more of these people are going to have to pay income taxes. You know, the question is, well, you know, part of why a lot of people aren't paying income taxes, that is something the earned income tax credit that actually a lot of Republicans and Democrats have pushed in the last few decades, that basically, I can't say it's exactly, but it's generally for a family making somewhere in the neighborhood of between $40,000 to $50,000. He basically gets a rebate on the federal income tax. So the question is, do you want those people to pay taxes? Do you want to, you know, another group of who aren't paying these taxes are the elderly if they're collecting a check from Social Security? Well, do you want to find a way to make them pay? It is a tricky discussion, but it's certainly, you know, if as a country we are having this big debate about how do we solve the budget deficit, you know, this is one of the things that's on the table. Do we need to broaden the base of people paying income tax?
And from analysis yesterday, it appeared to me from watching a lot of this coverage that a huge number of people who don't pay, they pay payroll taxes, but 10% would be elderly, and a large percentage of these people are people who aren't making very much money.
Right. Well, that's the question. And in fact, the reason a lot of Republicans, including Ronald Reagan and Bush, have pushed this before, it's basically seen as the Republican way to help the working poor instead of actually giving them some sort of government benefit. You're basically giving a tax cut, which, of course, Republicans love. So that's why a lot of Republicans have supported it in the past. And it has now sort of, you know, but again, when Reagan was doing it, when Bush was doing it, and during President Clinton, we didn't have these kinds of deficits. Now that we have these kind of deficits, we're looking at retrenching government and potentially raising revenue. Everything is back on the table, and you're seeing some Republicans flip on this issue.
Seth in Green Bay asks, what are Republicans looking for Romney to do now as far as presenting a favorable message? Does he need to go on a more aggressive offensive, or should he be taking a more reactionary stance?
Well, you know, the Romney campaign had a conference call with the reporters Monday morning where they basically said, we are going to get more specific with how we plan to turn around the country. The example that was given was energy independence. We would approve the Keystone Oil Pipeline that the president at least has delayed. We would allow more offshore drilling. We would lift the moratorium on drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Some of the problem with that is, you know, these actually aren't new ideas. They've been out there for months. So it doesn't exactly satisfy that clamoring among a lot of Republicans for more specifics. The Romney campaign's point is that they have been out there, but the public doesn't know about them. To be fair, we haven't really mentioned them. We haven't really made that as much of our message as maybe we should have. Now we're going to start doing that. We're going to explain to people, you know, how it is we're going to solve the deficit or create 12 million jobs. So basically, their point of view is what's old is new again. You know, they might be old specifics, but they're going to be new to voters, particularly those who are just tuning in for the first time.
Adam in Milwaukee. Hi, Adam.
Good morning, Kathleen, to you and your guest. As usual, I think that in these unguarded moments, Governor Romney says the most fascinating things. I would suggest that we have a debate on this subject that would be hour and a half, maybe 2 hours long, kind of with pie charts like Ross Perot. And the population will be divided up into the big chunks, you know, black, white, Latino, Asian American, Indian American, and then you'd have a discussion on male and female, and then you'd have discussions on, you know, educational attainment, you know, a typical type of job, medium income, incarceration rates, all kinds of things. And the final notion of this would be to find out if all these federal programs since the 60s with the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars we spent on them have actually made America better off or have just benefited a very small group of people. Oh, and throwing taxes, too, into that discussion. I think it'd be fascinating.
All right. Thank you, Adam, very much for your suggestion. Scott in Green Bay. Hi. Scott, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually think this is kind of a fascinating conversation. I'm glad it actually is taking place. I mean, if you look at the revenue stream to the federal government, 42% of the pie, 42% of what they collect comes from income taxes. 40% comes from payroll taxes. So 82% of what the federal government collects in tax revenues comes from those two sources to fund the government. So we already know that 53% of the people pay income taxes, 47% don't. And actually, when it comes to payroll taxes, half of what is paid is actually paid by the employee. The other half that they collect, 20% of it, comes from the employer. So what you have is you have a smaller and smaller base that is really funding the federal government. It's a much smaller base than most people think of it. And it's no wonder we're massively in debt, because you've got this small segment of the population, 53% who pay income taxes, and then employers paying half of all payroll taxes.
Well, then you also have to include those people who are very, very wealthy in this country who probably could be paying more taxes, but they've got this 14% income rate based on capital gains.
No, 82% of what the government collects comes from those two revenue sources. The concept of fair share is an asinine concept, because the concept of fair share means one thing when it comes to liberals. Fair share means more for somebody else to pay. When you've got 43% that don't pay income taxes and employers paying half of all the payroll taxes, you've got a very small segment of the population that is funding the government. And what you're really asking for is what you're saying then, Kathleen, is that small segment that is actually funding the government, they actually need to pay more. And I don't really understand that, actually.
But they're paying 14% of their income.
You know, that's an anomaly. The report that I found that was from the IRS, from the Treasury Department, it's like 4,300 some people actually pay that 15% of millionaires that pay that. It's such an anomaly. If you took and went back to the Clinton era rate and taxed everybody over $250,000 at a 39% rate, you would generate $800 billion in revenue over 10 years. That's $80 billion a year when you were running a $1.49 trillion deficit. It would change that $1.49 trillion deficit to $1.41 trillion deficit. It's a red herring. It's a straw man, is what that argument is. It truly is.
Alex.
Well, I think the caller basically articulated the conservative argument better than I ever could. You know, there is a sense that the people who have been successful are basically being tasked with funding the government, but they're not necessarily seeing a lot of the benefits of the very government that they're funding. And this is why, I mean, look, there are actually Republicans, and it's not for me to say whether they're right or wrong on a substantive level, who heard what Mitt Romney said, excuse me, and think basically, look, this should be your stump speech. That there is a divide here between people who are working and making this country successful and funding it and the people who aren't. And we, you know, that's what this election is about. That's why we want you to beat Barack Obama. I think politically speaking, that's a little problematic for reasons I laid out earlier. But there are a lot of Republicans who think this and are very sort of animated by this debate and think they have a very good point.
Thanks, Scott, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Generally, we're talking about the 47% and the political ramifications of that comment, the state of the Romney campaign, whether or not this prompts a needed conversation about the role of government and our tax rates in this country, which it obviously has, which is a good thing, and taking your phone calls. Here's an email from Jerry Ann, who writes, more damaging than accusing 47% of Americans of being moochers was his comments at the same fundraiser about the Israel-Palestinian situation, in which he essentially said the problem was too thorny. His strategy would be to kick the ball down the field and hope a solution will somehow magically present itself. Jerry Ann writes, that shows a lack of leadership. Would you like to comment, Alex?
You know, I think Mitt Romney, you know, we could talk about how this sort of affects his domestic sort of agenda a lot. But the truth is Mitt Romney would probably rather talk about sort of his domestic, what he plans to do domestically than he would want to do internationally. For one thing, it's what voters care a great deal about, more so than any sort of international conflict, even if we have all this tumult in the Middle East. It's fair to say that, you know, Romney has had a lot of stumbles when it comes to his foreign policy so far during the campaign. If you think back to when he visited London and, you know, he basically suggested that the country might not be ready to host the Olympics. You had politicians of all stripes and media of all stripes there basically condemning him. I mentioned earlier his response to the crisis in Libya. There are Republicans who think this is an issue that he can use against the president, that the president has been weak on foreign policy, and that if you want to depict him as sort of this flailing leader, you know, that might be necessary to win the election. The problem is, almost for the first time in a generation, it seems as though Democrats have an advantage on foreign policy. And when you look at sort of a matchup of who would be the better commander-in-chief, President Obama or Mitt Romney, the president wins that right now. And you could chalk a lot of that up to sort of the concerns a lot of Americans had about how President Bush executed the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, and the fact that the president, you know, gave the order to kill Osama bin Laden. It's an issue they very sort of vigorously have highlighted throughout the campaign. So Romney is on, you know, for a Republican presidential candidate in recent memory, is on sort of very weak ground when it comes to foreign policy.
And yet, maybe I'm making too much of polling, which I do watch not terribly carefully, but I do listen to them. Reports that I was hearing earlier this week showed that Romney's numbers were going up when it comes to who best on foreign policy, partially as a result of what's been going on in the Middle East for the past week.
That's true. And if I remember correctly, it was sort of a 12-point jump among independents. There is a concern. You know, part of the problem was when the attacks in Libya happened, you know, Romney issued his statement actually before we even knew that the ambassador our ambassador to the country had been killed. You know, there was so much focus on Romney's response. And Republicans and a lot of conservatives, maybe very justifiably, suggest too much attention paid to that rather than to a broader, more substantive assessment of the president's policy in the Middle East. You know, there was a lot of discussion, should he encourage the Arab Spring? Should he stand behind or stand next to longtime allies like the President Mubarak in Egypt? You know, now they suggest, look, we were right, they were wrong. The sort of anti-American demonstrations throughout the region and of the world sort of prove that. So that certainly could have an impact, and it's certainly going to be one, you know, how these demonstrations play out, at least in sort of the narrow scope of the American politics, you know, really could have a major effect on the presidential election.
More phone calls in a moment. We will also be listening to, there have been comparisons made between Romney's appearance at the Florida fundraiser in May and President Obama's appearance at a 2008 fundraiser in San Francisco. Are there qualitative differences between the two comments? We'll listen to what President Obama had to say, and that was the subject of a great deal of press analysis for more than one day. Yeah, are there similarities here? So we'll listen to that in a moment and continue our conversation with Alex Rorty, staff writer for National Journal. He has a very interesting piece that appeared this week, Will Gaffes and Disarray Sink Mitt Romney. 800-486-8655, our number. You can also email at talk@WPR.org or post on the Kathleen Dunn Facebook page or tweet to @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mitt Romney has been accused of making very disparaging remarks about the 47%. What about the disparaging remarks that President Obama made at his 2008 fundraiser in San Francisco? Are there similarities here? Let's listen to what the president had to say 4 years ago.
Our challenge is to get people persuaded that we can make progress when there's no evidence of that in their daily lives. And you go into some of these small towns in Pennsylvania, a lot of small towns in the Midwest. Yeah, the jobs have been gone now for 25 years and nothing's replaced them. And they've gone through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. So it's not surprising then that they get better and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy towards people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment, or anti-trade sentiment, and a way to explain their frustrations. Now, these are in some communities. I think what you'll find is that people of every background, they're going to be a mix of people. You can go to the toughest neighborhood, working class, much pale folks, and you'll find Obama enthusiasts. And you can go into places where you think that I'd be very strong and people will just be skeptical.
The phrase, of course, that we remember from that, Alex, is people who cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them. Many thought those comments were equally as disparaging as Mitt Romney's comments. What do you say?
Well, I was actually a reporter in Pennsylvania at the time when he made those
comments.
Oh, were
you?
I was. So you can imagine, I heard that particularly in western Pennsylvania nonstop at the time. And it was right in the middle of his primary fight with Hillary Clinton. At that time, he was clear he was going to win, but they were still battling it out in Pennsylvania. And it's a comment that undeniably hurt him in western Pennsylvania, which is very culturally conservative. It's a lot different than the eastern half of the state. It's very much part of the Midwest. There's no doubt there are a lot of similarities. You know, the bottom line to both is, both men were saying to sort of their privately to their, high dollar fundraisers, what they actually thought. You know, they weren't dressing it up politically. This was sort of their sort of like raw take on things. And it was the truth, basically. And in President's case, that it was sort of this very brutally condescending remark to culturally conservative people who support gun rights and things like that. So there are no doubt there are a lot of similarities. You know, it's interesting. The president was asked about this last night when he was on David Letterman's show. And the way he is playing it politically was say, look, I made a mistake. I acknowledge that right away. Mitt Romney, in response to this, is doubling down, as a matter of fact. And he is, actually. The governor has said what he said was not elegantly stated.
Yes.
It was off the cuff, but essentially true. And in fact, he said what I said there is basically the same thing I've been saying on the stump, which is in some ways is in fact true. So the president is saying, look, I acknowledge I made a mistake. The other guy, Mitt Romney, is not.
Bill in Madison, our next caller. Hi, Bill.
Hello. 2 points. One is a reaction to a previous caller. It's well known since 1950, since that aggregate tax burden has steadily shifted downward from corporate America to individuals, from 50% of the total tax burden to about 15%. So I don't want to hear about corporations funding the U.S. government, because over the last 50, since World War II, the total tax burden has been gradually shifting towards individuals and away from corporations. But the main reason I called is to say that Romney's position, certainly no surprise to me. I hear it from every Republican stalwart that I've ever known, pretty much, including my own parents. And so I pointed out to them that both my parents came from poverty. They came from, you know, basically working poor backgrounds, and they got out of it and eventually achieved an upper middle class existence from federal programs. They got their first house from a FHA loan. They got the GI Bill, which helped my father get through college. Anyway, I just went down a list of all these federal programs that my parents took advantage of, that without which they would still be in the same economic bracket as their parents were.
Alex.
Well, and that's basically like what the caller before sort of animated the conservative case on this issue. You know, he basically sort of details the liberal response to that. You know, that's basically President Obama's own response, that, you know, government programs. He mentions frequently the GI Bill that helped his own grandfather get an education. You know, this is basically that sort of role for government, that activist role, if you will, is very important to middle class security and to helping people reach the middle class, particularly if they're poor. And his point is that if Governor Romney is elected, those programs are going to be eliminated. In favor of what he would depict as tax cuts for the rich. So you need to basically reelect me because I have the sort of policy mixture here using government programs to help protect the middle class.
And Bill makes an important point that the tax structure has changed significantly since 1950. The burden has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that a lot. That's also part of the discussion, sort of the corporate tax rates. And it's interesting that how much this campaign, you know, there's always a lot of sort of derision about our politics is focused on sort of trivial issues. And to some degree, that's certainly true. But we have, I feel like, as a country, learned a lot more, at least I have, about tax policy this campaign.
Oh, yes.
Because you're talking just the sort of discussion about Mitt Romney's own taxes. And as you had said, he pays a tax rate through the capital gains instead of sort of a traditional income tax like a lot of Americans. And now this debate about who is paying the income tax. I mean, it has highlighted a lot of the issues. And it's interesting because the moment either of these gentlemen is elected, the country has a whole host of problems. There are a whole host of issues to solve on this front. In fact, actually before that, in sort of the lame duck session of Congress, whether or not you know, they're going to avoid this fiscal cliff. Then they have to determine, you know, do we keep all of the Bush tax cuts in place? Do we eliminate them as the president wants for at least the high income earners? So it's interesting. You kind of hope if you step back for a moment here, that sort of this debate helps at least bring a deeper understanding to the country and maybe make it easier to affect policy change.
David writes in, what I find interesting is that when Romney claimed in the primary debates that he paid the minimum tax he was legally required to do, that's fine. But when a low-income person does the same, they're an entitled victim.
Right. Well, look, if the danger of Romney being seen as a hypocrite on this issue is potentially pretty deadly for him. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the Obama campaign has not pushed this yet. That's not to say that they won't roll this out next week. They maybe want to try and string this out. Well, I know they want to try and string this out as long as they possibly can. But the sense that, you know, the Mitt Romney is deriding people less fortunate than him for doing the very thing that he actually does I don't need to tell people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's politically potentially a catastrophe.
What do you think? You probably know a lot about the internal workings of a campaign. The Republicans are usually very much on message. They usually run very good campaigns. Something's not wrong here. Can you blame the people who are running the campaign? Is it that the candidate isn't the best for them? Because it is a serious. I don't think it's just the press picking up on things. There doesn't seem to be a very strong message. And as you have said, and so many said, this could have been easily the year for the Republicans to win.
Well, there are two things. One, I think it's pretty fair to say that Mitt Romney is just not a very natural politician to begin with. He certainly isn't what you know, say Bill Clinton or even President Obama in terms of showing empathy and connecting with voters. You know, he is not. So you kind of start with that, and a lot of political veterans, people who are much smarter than I am about these subjects, say you can complain about the campaigns all you want, but the candidate himself or herself is always far more important. The second part of it, though, talking about where the campaign might have gone wrong here. You know, when Romney emerged from the general, from the primary, which is a very tough fight, you know, the calculation from his campaign was very simple. The economy is really bad. People blame Obama. We're going to win. I mean, it was that simple. But what they kind of missed as part of that was telling Romney's own story. Not only his personal story, but the story of what he plans to do for the country. In that sort of void, in that vacuum, the Obama campaign rushed in. The Obama campaign and some allied outside groups, you know, really early on in May, in the early summer, depicted him as, you know, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it a great deal, sort of his role at Bain Capital, the private equity firm, you know, and they raised questions, well, look, does that really qualify him as a jobs maker, or is this a guy who shipped jobs overseas? And then sort of on a more personal level, you know, really going after him for his tax returns. You know, what is he hiding? Is he the kind of guy who's stashing money away in the Cayman Islands?
Right.
You know, basically taking advantage of this of the system, you know, bent basically designed to help rich people in a way that people, poorer people, can't take advantage of. So that's basically been seen as sort of the main tactical error of the Romney campaign, and it makes sense. You know, and now, look, you know, a lot of Republicans are calling for him to fill in that gap. Well, it's not, you know, it's not the summer anymore. They're less than 2 months before the campaign. Time might already have run out on that question.
Mm. Greg in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I consider myself the 45% or whatever, and I just wanted to say that, you know, if the 45% of America is, you know, in need of some kind of financial assistance, that says a lot about the condition of America. And people who, you know, get on assistance, they basically need it. Those programs are there because it's needed, and it's not, you know, and that's basically what I want to say, is that the... you know, 45% of America is, there's something wrong, you know, with the condition of America.
Okay, thanks for the call. Alex?
Well, yeah, and that's actually, it's an extremely good point. And it's one that the Romney campaign has also tried to make. Look, the reason that a lot of people are too poor to pay income taxes is because the economy is bad. Well, guess why the economy is bad? The president has sort of enacted a series of policies that have really waged destruction on the job market. So it's basically, you know, they're trying to use it as an avenue to point out once again, basically their strongest case this election, that the president has mismanaged the economy.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Steve in Montreal. Hi.
Good morning. This is Steve from beautiful Montreal. I'm curious. A few years ago, there was discussion about flat tax. Does anybody want to raise that subject again?
Probably not, at least not in a general election. It was actually an issue that you saw a lot in the Republican primary. Governor Rick Perry from Texas rolled it out at one point, really much to the applause of a lot of conservatives. It's an idea that, if you remember, Steve Forbes' presidential campaigns were largely predicated on pushing a flat tax. The problem with a flat tax, politically speaking, is that it's seen as basically a regressive tax on poorer people. It's one reason why Mitt Romney hasn't embraced it.
It is interesting, isn't it, that the theme that you would have thought would have come through loudly and clearly during this whole campaign from the Republican side would be the very high unemployment rate, how to get this country back to work, how to create jobs, et cetera. And it seems to me as though the Republicans have not hammered on that message, which was such a natural for them. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. Part of the thinking is that maybe as bad as things are, it basically might get you 47, 48% of the electorate, but people just don't blame President Obama enough for the conditions for that to be your sole argument to win. There's also a sense, and my editor at the National Journal has written about this, that look, for a lot of people, particularly in the middle class and lower economic classes, this isn't new. Even if things have gotten exponentially worse since the recession, you know, they've been struggling for decades. And you see that where really income for middle-income families has tailed off in the last decade. So there's almost this sense of resignation that's set in that's deeper and more broad than it can be tied to any one presidential candidate. That's why some Republicans really think Romney does need to go on offense on something like foreign policy, that he's got to broaden his critique if he wants to win the White House.
Mm. One more call, short on time. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, just to make it short, you could probably, if you're running a deficit of over $1 trillion a year, you could probably tax all of us at 100% and wouldn't make a dent. So, you know, the only solution here is jobs, any kind of job. And the question is, of the two, who's best qualified to create those jobs? The rest is, you know, is lost in the ruckus.
And how do you think, where are we on that? What do you think people are thinking, Mike, right now? What's the answer?
I think people are confused. I think people are, you know, kind of lost.
You think people are kind of lost, Alex?
You know, I was watching a focus group last night on C-SPAN where they get together a lot of undecided voters. Mm. And the pollster was almost kind of beside himself by the end because they were complaining about both sides and, hey, no one really has a clear solution. But you're pressing, well, what would you like to see? And the voters would kind of throw up their hands and say, well, I don't really know. I'll know it when I see it, is actually the way one person put it. So there is a lot of frustration and a sense of, you know, neither candidate is presenting a real clear vision for how to get the economy back on track.
Right. Alex, thank you so much. You were a wonderful guest. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Alex Rorty, staff writer for National Journal, and you can see the interesting piece that he wrote in the National Journal on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your calls. Rest assured, we'll cover this political race pretty thoroughly as it proceeds. Great conversations ahead.